Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's Squiggly Careers podcast. I am Helen and I'm joined by my co-host of the podcast, Sarah.
Hi everyone.
And this is creeping up closer to episode 100 of the Squiggly Careers podcast, which is a bit of a milestone mainly just for Sarah and I think.
Yeah.
It is a lot of hours that we've talked about careers, and we have got working in the background, maybe if we can sort it out, a bit of a special event planned for our 100th episode, maybe a live recording. I'm saying maybe.
I like how many caveats you're putting into that. It's like that's the least definitive sentence I think I've ever heard. It's so like we may, if we can be bothered and figure it all out. I think we are pretty committed to it. We just need to sort it out.
The clarity on that is we're hoping to do a live podcast recording where we'll be able to invite some of you lovely listeners and other people to the live episode of recording and have a panel and various things. We've just got a few details to sort, minor thing like a venue and guests and paying for it and all those great things. But that's a work in progress, but we'll be exciting. Otherwise, it'll just be Sarah and I in our houses, normal style for episode 100. But today's podcast is all about conflict at work, and it's something that comes up quite a lot in sessions that we do one-to-one with people. It's something that people come to us quite a lot for advice for. And actually earlier today we did a bit of a temperature check on Instagram, so I did a poll on Instagram to find out what our Instagram community think about conflict, and I gave people two options of what do you think when you think about conflict. Do you A, avoid it at all costs, or basically it's no big deal? And 80% of the people that responded were like, avoid conflict at all costs. And it was just 20% that were like, yeah, it's no big deal, like I'm fine with conflict, which I think is quite reflective of the attitudes that I found out, maybe my own attitude to conflict, and also people that have worked for me and people we've coached. What do you think, Sarah, reflective of your conversations you've had with people?
Yes, well, we'll talk about it more, but certainly for me, conflict is one of my confidence gremlins. So way back when we first started this podcast, we did 10 episodes just on confidence gremlins. These are things that kind of hold you back from doing things that you want to do and that you know you'd like to do. And conflict is certainly one that I've had to really think about, be really proactive about, take a lot of initiative on, because I do find it really hard. So I'm certainly coming from that place of intuitively being like, run for the hills, head in the sand, avoid at all costs. But I've learned through experience and because of some of the things that I've wanted to do that if you take that approach, it holds you back. And so I've had to work really hard and do things that have made me very uncomfortable. So I'm sure we'll talk about that later, which would be nice. I have to say tonight's podcast, we were recording quite late in the evening. And this is one of my gin and tonic podcasts.
Have you got a gin and tonic?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I've got nothing.
Yeah, gosh. I usually have a water, to be clear to everybody, or like, you know, maybe even a herbal tea. But this week, and with everything I've got going on this week, my squiggly career is borderline knotty. We talk about at times your squiggly careers can be borderline knotty. So I decided that gin and tonic would be a good shout.
Well, you enjoy it. You deserve it.
So if I make less and less sense as I go through, that's why, essentially.
So the kind of flow for the conversation that we're going to have is we'll start off with just a bit of context, getting into a bit of the research on conflict, what's going on there. Then we are going to share a bit of our own experiences of conflict at work, how that feels, what situations have been a bit conflicty. And then we're going to get into different tips that we've got for how you can manage conflict a bit more constructively. So first of all, just starting with that conflict. So when I was looking at some different bits of research on this, one of the things that became clear was that there are some specific triggers for conflict at work, and they generally come from one of two things. The first is conflict at work can be triggered by a communication issue, either poor communication, so it's either delivered poorly or received poorly, or it's just a lack of communication, so a lack of clarity, a lack of awareness, a lack of understanding, that can be a source of conflict. The second trigger for conflict can be emotion and people's emotional response. And when I was looking at things in the research, I talked about the flight and freeze kind of modes that our brains go into. So if we are scared or we feel threatened, maybe there's some kind of blame thing going on, or just maybe actually our general emotional state isn't great because of other stuff that's going on, it can create an emotional response to a situation that can then trigger conflict. So I thought that was interesting. If you think about your situations at work, if you feel there's conflict going on, to what extent do you think it's as a result of maybe poor or a lack of communication, or maybe there's some kind of emotional trigger going on? And in my research, I ended up watching, well, actually, I went down a bit of a TED Talk rabbit hole on conflict talks. So I was on the train home today, and I'm sure the people opposite me must have thought I was some like TED Talk addict, because I watched about six different TED Talks on conflict.
I like the fact everybody else disappears into a Netflix wormhole and you go into a TED Talk one.
I basically just like searched for conflict, and there was a list of them, and I started watching them. But there was one TED Talk that I really kind of got stuck into, which was about why you should try and use conflict and not always diffuse it. And we'll link to that in the resources. But there was a really interesting question that I had to pause and think about in that particular TED Talk. And it was about, the question was, what did you learn about conflict growing up? So in terms of your experiences growing up, how did you experience conflict when you grew up? And how has that informed how you now think about conflict? I think this is particularly important for that emotion point. Like, what's the emotional state that conflict takes you to? And to what extent has your upbringing and what you experience created that state? So I don't want to get into too deep because it's very personal. But if I think about my upbringing, I think that conflict in my family, we didn't have a lot of conflict in my family, but I think it was because it wasn't that we didn't have issues. We definitely had lots of different issues going on in my family. But I think it was that because it was almost like everything's fine, there's no conflict here, move on. It was sort of that. And if I think about my attitude to conflict now, my husband would definitely say that that is how I approach conflict. Like, I don't like to get into it. I like to be like, let's just sleep on it and it'll all be fine in the morning. Sort of that kind of avoidance strategy. What does the question trigger for you?
Oh, I went down the right rabbit hole. When you sent me this message on WhatsApp, I was like, oh, that's so meaningful. And you, to be honest, you could probably lose the whole podcast to just answering that question, I decided. It made me think about the conflict I'd seen in my family. And actually, I'm definitely somebody who, like I say, shies away from conflict. And even if I think about, did you argue with your parents or not? Mm. And I'm one of three kind of girls, so I've got two sisters. And if I look at how certainly one of my other sisters would deal with conflict, and I don't think there's a right or wrong, but she would be much more prepared to argue or to disagree with our parents, whereas I would almost like bottle it up and just be like almost resentful, in my room, quietly resentful. And so that's...
I can just imagine you as a 14-year-old.
Almost like plotting, just sitting there plotting. It's almost like I was like some sort of like evil, not quite genius, to be honest. And actually, I remember like watching...
That's such a bad title, I'm an evil, not quite genius.
Yeah, exactly, which is probably a good summary. And I remember watching my sister and being like, oh, and I'm the oldest. When I saw her like actually talking about it / arguing, I was thinking, oh, I didn't realise that was a thing. Almost like that's so not ingrained in like who I am and my personality. And even when I used to hear them arguing, I really remember being like, I don't even want to be in the same space. I would go to my room, and I was the oldest, so I always had like the best room, obviously. And I remember spending a lot of time in my room by myself. And at this point, I then started to get into like loads of ins and outs of like conflict. And I was like, right, perhaps stop there, because I feel like it won't be that helpful in terms of helping people deal with conflict at work. But I think it is a really fascinating question to ask yourself.
So just in summary then, the question, if you're listening, to ask yourself is, what did you learn and experience about conflict growing up? And how has that affected how you think about conflict now? So that's the big question. See if it takes you down the rabbit hole like us. And I guess the other thing that really prompted me to reflect a bit was about the narrative around conflict. Like, generally, the narrative around conflict is that it's bad. Like, conflict is bad, and compromise, consensus, collaboration are good. I think there's quite a lot of like associations with conflict being a bad thing. But actually, when I was looking into, is it really true? Like, is all conflict bad? There's quite a lot of evidence and research that actually not all conflict is bad. And in lots of situations, constructive conflict can be really effective. So for example, if you've got creative friction, which I thought was quite a nice way of reframing conflict, actually, you've got creative friction, that can be an opportunity to get new solutions. So to think about new ideas and to build on each other's ideas, and that friction can lead to new solutions. Also, if you kind of, maybe conflict might come from putting yourself into challenging situations or having challenging conversations. But in challenge and in stretching ourselves and sometimes in being uncomfortable, that can be the thing that helps us to lead to growth.
Yeah.
Also, if you've got individuals who've got conflict with each other, but it's constructive and you can work it through together and you can resolve that conflict, that can actually lead to a stronger relationship than maybe the one that you started out with. And also, if you've got diverse teams, I thought this was a really interesting thing. So if you've got diverse teams, you are very likely to have more diverse opinions and you're very likely to introduce more conflict into a situation as a result of having diverse teams. But why would we then say, okay, well, we don't want conflict, so we'll have this really homogeneous team of everyone looking the same? So it's sort of part and parcel of, if you want a diverse team, it is likely that you are going to get more conflict. So what we need to help that lead to is more inclusive conversations where we can invite those different perspectives. So I just thought it was really interesting that we shouldn't make this leap of conflict is a bad thing, because actually there's a lot of examples where conflict, when it's managed well, and we'll give the tips for how to manage it well, can actually lead to quite positive outcomes in teams and organizations.
And I think actually we'll have to I'll have a look for it and see if we can add to the resources. I'm sure McKinsey did some really good work on, everyone has this thing around, of course, diversity is a good thing. I think most businesses now kind of accept the business case around diversity from every different angle. But I think the nuance of diverse teams actually are often more challenging. And you know, the stages of team dynamics, the kind of forming, storming, norming, performing that lots of teams go through in terms of those different team dynamics, is harder for diverse teams. It takes longer to get to the performing stage than it does for a team where people are more similar. And I think that's something, it's actually a really important aspect of teams that is really underestimated, and then as a result not invested in terms of, okay, so what does that mean in terms of the time that we might need to spend together, the relationships that we need to build, understanding each other's strengths. So there's probably kind of something specific there that just might be interesting for people. So I'll see if I can find that stuff from McKinsey, because I've used that a few times to talk to people about teams and leadership. And one of the things I found really reassuring, because often you give yourself a hard time about, you know, oh, I need to get better at conflict and being able to disagree with people constructively. And certainly it's something I think about a lot, because it's something I'm continually trying to get better at, because I know I find it hard. But there's a book called Crucial Conversations, and it points out that 95% of like an average company find it difficult to speak to their colleagues, managers, or direct reports on sensitive subjects. So things that people kind of find hard or
basically
need to disagree.
Everyone.
Yeah. And then the problems just tend to fester. And I was just like, yeah, that's sort of, you know, you see that, you do see that on the things that are particularly hard to talk about. Often I think the default is, oh, we just sort of won't get there, or it gets left to the end of the agenda and then you don't really ever end up covering it. Or, you know, the real classic one of like, oh, we don't need to talk about it now. You know, we'll talk about it separately or separately. And you just think, yeah, but then how's that actually going to get sorted? And I see that sometimes where I'll think that's because it's hard and it's hard to talk about, and people almost just avoid it by going, well, let's just not do it now. And then I wonder if it ever actually gets done.
Well, actually on that point, when I was looking into, if you just ignore conflict, like actually what's the harm? Do we really need to have conflict? It has all these benefits, but maybe we could just ignore it.
Tell me I can just ignore it.
No, you can't, because Sarah, unresolved conflict leads to, this is like a four things that is bad, loss of productivity, stifling of creativity, creates barriers to collaboration, and it increases the risk of people leaving. So actually it's not really a great option to let it fester. Basically, we need to tackle this head on.
And I think one of the things that's really interesting to think about just before we move on to top tips is, we talked about triggers. So spotting triggers for conflict. I then think, be aware about what your reaction is when conflict occurs. And this is different for different people, but certainly my reaction to conflict, and often I think the biggest trigger for me tends to be around emotion. And when people are emotional about their conflict or disagreement, my reaction as an introvert is to withdraw, is to almost kind of not really engage. I don't probably quite put my head in the sand. I sort of almost just go, I'm going to find a different way. I think my answer is often like, can I find a different route or a different way of getting to whatever it is I'm trying to do? But actually, I find it hard to kind of directly engage in those conversations. And I'm really mindful of knowing the trigger and also knowing what's most likely to happen. And because I withdraw, the other thing I do is I stop listening, because in my head, I'm often thinking about the conflict or the fact that I feel uncomfortable, and I'm very aware of physically feeling uncomfortable. It then starts going around in my brain, you know, like, oh, this is really awkward or really awful or whatever. And almost that kind of voice in my head means that I'm not actually listening to what's being said. And it stops me then being able to engage or to actually almost like participate in a useful way in that conversation. So I think both, I've certainly found spotting the triggers and spotting your reactions, even just by doing those two things, I think everyone will find actually that allows you to then think about, okay, so what action might I take to do things differently? So hopefully as we start to go through some of the top tips, you'll recognise, oh, okay, that would be a useful action for me to take. And that's essentially all I've done. I would say probably over the past 6 years, I have worked really hard on going, I know what my triggers are now. I know how I would ideally react, as in if I was just in kind of flight mechanism, when you're in fight or flight, I'd always go into kind of flight. And so I know what I really want to do. And then I've got some tips and tricks that sort of help me come away from those and actually almost see conflict as a positive thing, understand the benefits, because none of this stuff is a rational thing. You all know, everyone knows it's a good thing for people to have different points of view, and that, of course, the right thing to do is to do something about it. But actually then taking small actions can feel quite hard. So it's almost like now taking this from the theoretical into the practical. And I think the starting point for that is triggers and reactions.
I think there's probably just one area where you and I differ quite a lot, actually, is how we deal with conflict, because yeah. I am really okay with it to a point. So I'm really happy to say to somebody that I disagree. And I don't think I do that in a particularly aggressive way. I feel relatively comfortable in situations where there's an element of conflict. But I think when the tipping point comes, so when it's gone from something that I feel that I can engage in constructively to something that maybe it's become like an emotional thing for me, probably, where you go into flight mode, I think that's where I go into fight mode. And I suddenly go, this is it. And I'm not an aggressive person, so it's not like this angry outburst, but I sort of will take that conversation on. Like, God, I remember like an awful conversation when I was at BP, and somebody was really disagreed with what somebody was trying to do. I was in the marketing function. It was someone in the sales function at the time. And I remember on the phone, he said to me, now you hang on a minute, young lady. And I was like, yeah, exactly. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now this has become personal. And I was like, this is not the time to patronize me. And I said, you know, rather than let that go, I would take that on in the moment, and I'd be like, that is not a constructive comment. We're going to get right back to the point and leave that for another time. Like, I will like go into it, and I think
you could be quite scary. It already sounds a bit scary. Like,
yeah, exactly. It makes you feel uncomfortable. And to be honest, it's not how I want. I guess the thing is, like, I have said that, and I don't think, oh, that's a great way of dealing with it at all. It's an emotional way of dealing with it. And I think that's the thing. I can be constructive, but the point at which you go
it's
into
like
flight.
It's like a tipping point.
Yeah, and you go into flight, and that might not be brilliant, but I think I might go into fight, and I don't think that's brilliant either, because I've sort of lost control of my ability and how I respond in those situations. So really useful to know what your triggers is. Mine is probably the point at which it becomes personal. That is the point at which I think that emotion flips into that space that I'm not that comfortable with how I respond to it.
So we've got a slightly random number of 7 top tips. And that's because we think there are 7 really useful top tips, and that's how many we could come up with. So we sort of had a conversation like, does it need to be 10? And then we were like, why are we like making up these numbers? There's 7 things that we think are really useful. So do you want to kick off with the first one?
Yeah, sure. So actually this was prompted by the TED Talk that I watched, so I won't over talk about it now, but the title of the TED work is about conflict, use it, don't always diffuse it. And the point is that a lot of people, because your association with conflict might be that it's a bad thing, what you might try to do in a room where there's conflict is you might try to sort of mediate it and reduce the conflict in the room. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you buy what we were talking about earlier, that if there's constructive conflict and you're trying to invite different opinions, then actually that you can use it, like you can invite and say, does everyone agree with this? Has anyone got a different perspective? Where's that coming from? What, like, actually you can invite a bit of conflict and disagreement and debate into a room, and actually it can lead to better ideas. So it's just, the tip is, don't always assume that diffusing conflict is the right thing to do. Sometimes you can use and channel it to a more like a stronger outcome, stronger relationships, stronger creative outcomes, stronger solutions, if you can do it in a constructive way.
One of the things that really makes me think about in terms of, often there are kind of interrelated concepts or kind of different things that we talk about, is how important psychological safety is in the context of conflict. And that's not something I know. If somebody's not done that research, somebody definitely should look at the kind of correlation or causation between those two, because I would imagine, whereas a team, as a company, you've created really high psychological safety, which we've talked about on the podcast before, but essentially that just means that people all feel like they can make mistakes, there's not a blame culture, everyone kind of feels like they're trusted to do, you know, their jobs, and so people are just feeling like they're in this kind of safe environment essentially. I wonder then whether that makes it then easier to do exactly what you've just described, because I was then trying to think about the times where I've seen challenge and conflict be used really constructively. It's always been in teams where there's been really high psychological safety. Maybe if no one's done that research, I should suggest it, and then I don't know.
I listen back to my podcast, we've had so many podcasts where we're like, that is a bit of research that's not done, maybe we should do that. We've got a long list of research that we'd quite like to do.
Yeah, so that's the first tip, with a new research idea for anyone who's listening who's an academic. Number two is to reflect and talk about the problem and not the person. And I found this really useful because my triggers for conflict is often around emotion, so people being emotional, I then associate that emotion with the person. And so often I lose sight of what's almost like the disagreement about. So rather than what is the disagreement about, I think about, well, who is the disagreement with? And that's actually a very different thing. That's when it becomes personal. You're saying, well, I actually disagree with that person. Mm. And then it starts to feel more about personality, who they are, and those sorts of things. Whereas actually, if you can go, well, actually, we've got different points of view about how to solve X, Y, or Z problem. Let's talk about why that is. Let's imagine we had the opposite points of view. What would you do? What would you get to? That's actually been something that I've been taught before, actually, on a leadership program that I have found useful, is if you're clear about what the actual problem is you're trying to solve, then imagine that you had the opposite perspective to the one that you have got. How would you make that argument? Because it helps you to understand, I guess, where other people are coming from. Mm. And it helps you to just more constructively talk about the problem rather than focus on the person. So I think, yes, sometimes you end up in conflict with people who maybe you don't always get on with brilliantly. But this is not about being friends with everybody. This is much more about being able to actually focus on getting to good solutions. And I think if you think about problems and not people, it will really help just how you frame taking action.
And the third tip that we've got is also kind of a bit of a reflection point and the perspective that you've got, which is that you, in a conflict situation, it can be more effective if you focus on what you're hearing in the conversation, not what you're saying. Mm. So if I think about that, if you're thinking about, I want to land this message, I want to get my opinion across, it is important that I say this, then that becomes your focus, like making that point becomes your focus, and it can introduce that kind of conflict into a conversation. But actually, if you're seeking, what's that saying, Sarah, about seeking to understand?
Seek first to understand and then to be understood.
I think it's getting at that, really, which is that you're trying to, where are people coming from? What is their perspective? What's driving this? And if you put your predominant attention on that and not trying to prove your point or push through your point, it's not to say that you can't make your point, but actually it's more powerful for you to focus on the other person's perspective. What's driving them? Is this emotion, do you think, or is it communication? Yeah. Like start trying to read into it a little bit more rather than just kind of default, well, I've got a message to make, so I need to make it in this moment because I disagree with what you're saying. That's not going to necessarily lead to constructive conflict.
Yeah, I always ask myself, am I listening to hear what somebody's got to say, or am I waiting to speak?
Yeah.
And that's just generally quite a good reminder, because sometimes someone will be talking to me, even actually if it's about something that I'm passionate about, and I'm almost like so enthusiastic that I'm just literally just waiting to speak. Whereas I'm like, okay, I'm obviously not listening properly to what somebody's got to say in that situation. But I think particularly in times of conflict, you do stop listening. Because you disagree, you just start to build almost like the opposite case in your head. Whereas the other thing that somebody said to me around this in terms of listening is, don't forget, you don't have to resolve disagreements or conflict all in one moment. And that really helped me. So actually, if you focus, let's say for the first time that maybe you're having a disagreement, or maybe you weren't expecting somebody to disagree with you, which are often situations I find hard, is when I'm not expecting it. Actually, what I've learned to do in those moments is just to focus on listening. That's all I try to do. I actually don't try to almost make the counter argument if I've got a different point of view. If I do end up doing a bit of that, then great. But my primary objective in those moments is to really listen, really hear. My aim is to understand the other person's point of view, because it's different to mine. So I need to try and make sure I really understand it, because it's not kind of naturally what I think. That point about just don't try and solve everything in one conversation or one moment is just quite a useful practical tip that somebody once told me, and it actually was really kind of transformative.
Last week as well, I did a squiggly career tip on the power of the pause. And I was thinking when you were talking actually about why are we always thinking about saying something? Why does our attention go to what do I say next? And I just remember when I gave that tip, I was looking at some research and it said that we have a sort of a preset conversation cadence. I think it says that we talk generally within something like 6 milliseconds. I can't remember it. But basically that our patterns of communication are that there is almost no space between when one person finishes and the other person starts. Like, it's not natural for us to have this pause. Therefore, we are always preempting what we're going to say rather than inviting the pause. And actually, what's wrong with a pause? Like, even in conflict, if you can stop yourself, if you just put your attention on hearing and listening, and then yes, at some point you're going to respond, but give yourself a pause before you respond, it also might not only will it improve your listening, it might reduce some of the emotional response, because you're not just instantly firing back your thoughts or opinions on a situation.
I was just thinking then, do I have to like pause for an extra moment before I come in with the next tip? Because I feel like we should be like living and breathing this. But on a podcast, that perhaps doesn't work quite so well. So the fourth tip, which is one of the best things a coach has ever said to me, is name another word that you associate with conflict. So if you're doing kind of word association, if you say conflict, what else do you think about? And when she said that to me, the first word that came to my mind was war. And when you realise that actually you're framing something at work in the kind of similar terms of reference as to something as dramatic and much more significant and clearly serious, it starts to make you reframe, I think, how you use language around people disagreeing and how you view conflict, and actually thinking about this from a much more positive perspective. And I was definitely one of those people who always viewed conflict as a bad thing, always. It was always my kind of starting point, always my assumption. Whereas now I really try to frame, I actually try not to use the word conflict, because I find that it just has too many negative connotations and associations for me. I actually just think about constructive challenge, constructive debate, constructive people showing their points of view, conversations that get us to better outcomes by people kind of sharing different points of view. So actually, I really intentionally don't use the word, just because I have so many negative connotations with it. I then try to think about any kind of scenario where I feel like, okay, there are different perspectives here, starting off with a kind of positive mindset, because I naturally am actually a really positive and enthusiastic person. And that's probably the one time when those kind of things happen, because I become quite withdrawn, I sort of lose that. And so actually what I really tried to do is bring my normal enthusiasm and positivity to those situations, because I think then that's something I can do. That's, you know, I can bring that. It doesn't mean that I don't take them seriously, but it doesn't mean that I suddenly become a sort of an inconsistent person and people go, oh, what's just happened to Sarah? She seems to have just, you know, disappeared from this conversation. And also that's not great for people, you know, if you're leading teams, people need to see that it's okay to disagree if you're leading teams, that you're not always right and that you're prepared to understand other people's perspective. And actually, that might be a better conclusion than the one that you've come to. And I would want people to kind of know that and see that in me in terms of my leadership and my leadership style. So just think about, you know, if you were to write down 5 words to do with conflict at work, what would those words be?
I'd love to do that and compare them with you.
Yeah, most of them probably wouldn't be positive, but then think about what would it take for those 5 words to all be positive words. And that's a very practical exercise that I've done, because when I did those 5 words, the fact that my first one was war, and I hope lots of yours wouldn't be, and I just hadn't even thought about it. I just had built this thing up in my head as to being such a kind of dramatically bad thing. And then suddenly just having that realization has really helped to move my kind of starting point for conflict to a really different place. I think, and that's been really valuable for me.
I think it's really interesting. And I guess being along for the ride with you for a little bit with your confidence gremlin, I think you talk about it much more positively and you talk about your action much more positively when you talk about it as debate or constructive conversations. Like I almost see physically when you talk about them that is a more comfortable space. Definitely something that I can see working. So tip number 5 is when you are in a conflict conversation, that the role that you should take in that conversation should be to come from a place of curiosity and respect. Because if it is anything other than that, then you might be getting into territory which isn't constructive, basically. So if I think about, you know, I was talking about that BP example, that was definitely, that conversation had passed. I'd stopped being curious because I'd kind of gone into fight mode, which was much more about what I wanted to say. So I'd stopped being curious. And I think I'd lost some respect in that conversation. And so what I might have needed to do is to dial back a little bit and either ask questions about that person's perspective or where they were coming from or what was going on. But I think it's a really helpful, I'm not saying that these conversations are always going to be easy, either because they're just not, they're difficult conversations, or because you emotionally might feel difficult, you know, because maybe you're an avoider like Sarah. So I'm not saying that they're easy, but if you can think to yourself in the moment, am I coming from a position of curiosity? Am I trying to find out and understand? And am I coming from a position of respect? Am I coming across and do I feel like I respect their opinion? If you're not, because it's become heated, for example, I think you probably need to take yourself out of that conversation. Like, as in, say, can we continue this tomorrow? I'd really like to just reflect on this before we keep going. Because if you are genuinely in a situation and you haven't got respect for the person and you can't put yourself genuinely in a position of curiosity, that is not going to be a positive conversation. There's not going to be a positive outcome. All the bad stuff that we talked about that conflict can result in, that is going to be the outcome. So maybe just creating yourself a period of distance might mean that you can return to that conversation with a bit more control over, this is kind of my respect for this person and my respect for the business and my respect for the outcome, and what does coming from it as from a position of curiosity look like if you're not in control of that in the moment.
And the one thing I would say here is you can only focus on and control your own attitudes,
really good point,
mindsets, behaviours. So I could imagine people listening to this now and go, well, this is all well and good, but I do these things, or I'm going to try and do these things, and that's not potentially what I always get from other people. And that will be true. That will be the case. And that's definitely been the case for me sometimes when I've been trying some of these things. But what I've actually found is that I almost just hold myself accountable for thinking, have I acted and behaved in the way that I feel like I have done all those things that we've talked about? Have I started from a perspective of listening? Have I been curious? Have I respected the other person? Have I tried to be constructive? Almost like, as long as, and I tried to hold myself up to a really kind of high bar to do those things. Doesn't mean you always do it perfectly. But if you go, well, if I've got that high bar for myself, that is all that you can do. And actually, I have found, because sometimes it's more successful than others, but I've always felt better as a result, because I've always felt like I've given it my best shot to do something positive and to do this in the right way, and recognising that if you do this in the right way, you get to better outcomes. So I think just control what you can control, and you can't worry about necessarily what people are doing.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalised plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So tip number six is to just figure out, and I would hope as you've been listening to us, whether you're a conflict avoider or a conflict seeker, and you've probably started to kind of get a bit of a sense of this. And there's a really good HBR article, which we will post in the resources, that is definitely one that's worth a read in terms of, once you know what you are, and most people intuitively will know, what to do when you're dealing with maybe somebody else like you or somebody else different to you. So if you're a conflict avoider, and I've had this, and you've got a manager who is a conflict seeker. So I had a manager once who enjoyed conflict, like, honestly.
She probably say that in, like, such a scathing tone.
I know. I think it's because I find it so hard to understand. But she actually, like, reveled in it. I guess they, like, would have been a debate team if that was a thing, and that was never a thing when I went to school. But, you know, if it was that sort of thing existed, you could just imagine them just, like, loving it. Like, people, some people, like, love a good argument, don't they? Yeah. And I find that so hard to understand because it's so different to me. But I remember, actually, I had to really work on how that relationship was going to be constructive and collaborative for both of us, because she'd kind of really want to, like, debate something. And the problem with me was, in those situations, obviously, I withdrew. So I did the exact opposite of what she was hoping, to just have, like, a really constructive, let's debate and let's think about this. And I'd be like, oh my God, I'm just going to start avoiding it. And you get to this kind of awful sort of shying off, standoff type way where kind of basically nobody's winning.
Yeah.
So I think if you can just self-identify and then think about, you know, the key people around you and which you think they are. And I think it's pretty easy to spot for most people whether they, like, enjoy this kind of stuff or not. And almost like, you know, some people just challenge for challenge's sake, don't they? And again, I think once you recognise those things, you get much better at how to build relationships with those people and, again, to be constructive. So I'd really encourage you to think about it for yourself, have a look at the article and get some practical hints and tips on how to then work with people who maybe have got a different starting point to you.
And the last tip, so tip number seven, it's actually from another Harvard Business Review article. This is a different one, so again, I'll put it in the links. And it's written by a guy called Mark Gerzen. But this tip is about diagnosing the type of conflict you're dealing with. And I found this really interesting. Like, you want to diagnose whether it is a hot conflict or a cold conflict, because the way that you might work with that conflict would be different. So hot conflict, for example, is where there's, like, high levels of emotion, so that you've got people that are speaking loudly, maybe there's language that's maybe a bit threatening or it's personal, it's potentially like an explosive situation. So have you got a hot conflict situation on your hand? Cold conflict is very different. This is where people are a lot more closed. There's a bit more muttering going on. They're suppressing emotions. They're withdrawing. They're getting defensive. The silent treatment, you know, passive aggressive overload. So that is cold conflict. Now, if you are stepping into that situation to try and turn that into a constructive conflict, you would treat it differently. So, for example, if you're dealing with a situation where there's hot conflict, what we would want to do is try and bring those people together and maybe set some kind of ground rules. So let's pause this conversation before this goes any further. Let's set some ground rules. We're going to keep this personal. In the article, actually, it says about maybe even giving people a time period. So you would say, look, I want to make sure that everybody has their view and everybody is heard. The ground rules are we respect it when it's people's turn to talk. We don't make personal statements about people. And we're each going to have 3 minutes to share kind of how we're feeling and our opinion. So basically, if you're dealing with hot conflict, just letting it thrash itself out isn't really useful. But maybe taking a pause and setting some ground rules and putting boundaries around the conversation could be.
At one point there, Helen, you said, let's make it personal. I think we meant
don't make it personal. Don't make it personal. That's definitely not what, sorry, didn't mean to say that. It's late. That you treat it quite differently if the conflict is cold. So in that situation, what you would want to do is almost warm it up. This is very much back to the point Sarah was saying earlier about psychological safety. So how can you create a situation where it's okay for people to say that I don't disagree? Like, people might not want to say that because they might fear there might be repercussions, but actually, can you create an environment where it is safe and people feel like it's okay to do that? So it's much more about warming up. If you want to read more about it, there's loads more in the article about different tactics you can take if you identify that you've got cold conflict going on at work, or maybe this hot conflict situation too.
So just to summarise those 7 top tips, because we've talked around them a little bit, so just in case, I know some people make notes when they listen to the podcast, so just to check you've kind of got each of the 7. Number 1, know when to use it. You don't always have to diffuse it. Number 2, reflect and talk about the problem, not the person. Number 3, focus on what you're hearing, not what you're saying. Number 4, think about how you frame conflict. Number 5, begin from a place of curiosity and respect and keep in that place. Number 6, are you a conflict avoider or a conflict seeker? And what's the profile of the people that you work with? And number 7, diagnose the conflict. Is it hot or cold? So a really complicated area, and one that I think everyone's always a work in progress in. So please don't try to do all 7 simultaneously, because I can imagine if I tried to do all those, I would just literally implode. So maybe take, take the one that feels most relevant to your current situation or the thing that you'd like to work on the most. And I think just certainly from my experience, just starting to try things out, starting to do things differently, and taking kind of incremental actions has, over quite a long period of time, has worked really well for me. As ever, all of the resources will be on the website. And if this podcast is useful for you and you'd like to just learn more, there's a couple of extra ones that we would recommend listening to of the Squiggly Careers podcast. So there was episode number 20, where we talked about how to tackle difficult conversations, and episode 67, where we talked about managing emotions at work. So if this is an area of particular interest to you, then maybe worth checking those 2 out.
And before we kind of sign off and tell you what we're going to talk about next week, we are going to introduce our new feature. So we mentioned on last week's podcast that we're doing a bit of a test to see whether we can get some of you lovely people listening to share with us your best piece of career advice. And then we are going to play it live on the podcast. So we've actually got our first one through, which is from Alice. So we're going to play that now. So Alice is actually going to share her best piece of career advice. She's one of our listeners with us. And then I'm going to talk about how you can share your best piece of career advice and how we can play it on our podcast for you. So over to Alice.
Hi Sarah and Helen. So the best piece of career advice I ever got was about defining your North Star, because when you have a clear idea about where you want to get to in the long term, it can really help with making informed decisions about what to do in the short term to enable you to get there. If you know what your bullseye looks like, you're way more likely to hit that target.
Brilliant tip from Alice. Thank you very much for being our first person on the Squiggly Career Advice. If you are listening and you have a piece of career advice that has been meaningful to you, or you think would help people, or maybe you'd just like to get your voice on the Squiggly Careers podcast, then the way to do it is to record a voice memo. So on your phone, I only know the way to do this on iPhones, but I'm actually going to put the instructions for how you do a voice memo on your iPhone on an Instagram post. But it's pretty, pretty simple. You just search for the voice memo app on your phone, record yourself speaking to your phone with your best piece of career advice. Maybe tell us your name, that would be brilliant as well. So record your name, tell us your best piece of career advice, and then email that voice memo over to getintouch@amazingif.com. We go through them all, and our aim is to play one person's career advice a week at the end of the podcast. So yes, we look forward to hearing from you. We'd love to get some other voices, and particularly our community's voices, on the podcast.
And so thank you so much for listening again today. We really appreciate you joining us each week, continuing to rate, share, recommend the podcast. It makes a real difference to us, and we read everyone, usually more than once, in terms of the reviews that we get, because they make us so happy. And next week's episode is actually inspired inspired by the latest series of Chef's Table. I love Chef's Table, a brilliant series on Netflix. If you like food,
convincing me to try and watch.
And they're just, the stories are fascinating. And it's so brilliantly shot. It's really beautiful all across the world. So it's fascinating. And actually, the most recent episode I was watching, this guy was talking about how his ambition for his career is purely happiness at work. And he talked about how it's so stressful being a chef. I think some of the hours they work and the dedication and the desire for perfection. And actually, he's kind of come out of working almost phenomenal hours and actually having a really negative impact. And interestingly, he said since his goal has been happiness at work, he has produced the best food that he's ever done. And so I was like, oh my God, that's like, he could be on an Amazing If podcast. That's basically all I ever think about. But it really inspired me. So next week, we're going to dedicate a full episode just to happiness at work. What does it mean? How can you get more of it? And there's loads of really interesting things to kind of learn, read, watch and listen to in this area. So really looking forward to talking about that. But that's everything for this week. Thanks again for listening and we'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.